in honor of that, I am giving a Pentecost message, believe it or not. The title is Pentecost, Fact, Fiction, and Truths. So for Christians, today is Pentecost. It's the day when Christians recount the story of the Spirit, coming to the followers of Jesus 50 days, 50 days after Jesus' tomb's found empty. That's the Penta part of the Pentecost. It actually means 50. So I'm going to ask for your patience, particularly at this service, being that I am a Christian minister and being that Pentecost is a pretty big day in Christianity. Some even, sorry about this, Ralph, incorrectly call it the birthday of the church. I'd like to spend my time today talking about the Pentecost story. Hopefully, my take on the story will resonate with you spiritually, if even only in a small way. But hopefully, it will resonate maybe a little more deeply than that. So, it is a wild, even unbelievable story. As a matter of fact, to our modern minds, it's very unbelievable. The reality is, at least in my mind, it probably isn't entirely factual. However, I also have to say, in my mind, it is sort of true. It's a story that tells the tale of how a small, marginalized, fearful group of followers of a wandering rabbi who were scared to death about being associated with him for fear that they would end up crucified just like him. It's a story of how they stopped hiding in the shadows and began to actually begin living by his teachings. See, I would argue that at its core, this less than factual story is a story about how a group of people decided to live into their beliefs, to live their lives sort of set on fire, to actually live as though they believed in and valued the lessons the wandering rabbi taught. It's a story about people finding the courage to risk being who they say they are. In times like this, that's certainly a valuable lesson, regardless of how factual the story is or isn't. Here's the story, at least at its core, as it's recorded in Acts. And suddenly, from heaven, there came a sound like the rush of a violent wind, and it filled the entire house where they were sitting. Divided tongues, as of fire, appeared among them, and a tongue rested on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other languages. And the Spirit gave them the ability. I mean, of course, no one really knows what happened in that room that day. Personally, I don't think that tongues of fire actually danced over top of anybody's head. And I also don't happen to think that people started speaking in strange languages. My guess is simply that those things were, well, meant to be understood as metaphor. If I had to venture a guess about that day and the events that led up to it, I'd probably say that after their teacher's death, they were very afraid, probably a bit lost. And at that point, being associated with Jesus would have definitely been scary, not to mention dangerous. I assume that they were probably wondering what was going to happen next, particularly to them. So they gathered together and they hid. Then, as they were hiding, like folks tend to do when they lose a loved one, well, they probably began talking to each other. Talking to each other about what Jesus had meant to them and about what his teachings had meant to them. It wouldn't be that big of a leap to believe that they started recalling Jesus' stories and his interactions with others. Thinking about thinking about things like how much better they would be if they practice turning the other cheek and taking the log out of their own eye before removing the speck from someone else's, and about how you, when you feed the hungry and you visit the sick and to clothe the naked, you are doing those things to God and to each other. In my mind's eye, they probably thought about how exciting and positive life was when they were there with Him and following His teachings. And then they probably thought about what life was like now that they were holed up inside of four walls with trepidation about going out into the world. I like to think that they realized that even though they very much enjoyed each other's company and the activities they shared inside those four walls, that they wanted more out of life. They wanted more out of life than that. They wanted more for the world than that. I'd like to think that they realized that following Jesus' teachings of love and equality required action. And somehow, they found the courage to do it. I suspect that that is when people started noticing them. They began to live differently. They became the people who welcomed and embraced the outcast. They became people who took care of the sick, fed the hungry, clothed the naked. They sold their possessions and together held things in common. Admittedly, nowadays, more traditional Christians would call them communists or socialists. Maybe that's something we all should aspire to. I don't know. In short, for their day and age, they were radical. They included women and slaves and the most despised people in the society. They didn't call themselves Christians. They called themselves people of the way. They were seen as ones who lived differently. Maybe we should be too. So, what does all of this have to do with progressive spirituality? Well, hopefully some of it's obvious, but I'll be specific about part of it. There is sort of a Pentecost movement rippling through Christianity and other religions, particularly in the more progressive wings. The proverbial fire that ignited the first disciples seems to be putting a fire under folks nowadays as well. More and more folk are thinking about what it means to live life every day in a way that can change individual lives and change the world. Folks seem to be figuring out that their spirituality is not about going to church, but about being church. Or more precisely, being what the church is supposed to be to the world. Love. Being love. In formalized religion, it's actually called a missional movement. The idea is for institutions, specifically the people in them, to stop spending so much time, so much energy advertising and trying to attract people to join their congregation, and instead to start spending time going out into the world. It's really not unlike the early Christian communities did after Pentecost, as they spread the teachings of Jesus by living them out in their daily lives. In many ways, it's not surprising that we've ended up here. You see, in general, the church has become synonymous with the larger dominant culture. In most ways, it is no longer countercultural. It's become an arm and an agent to the corporate consumer culture in which we live, and as well a tool of conservative politics. The missional movement sees being a follower of the way as an extraordinary counter-cultural way of living. If the church is to be an organization that takes seriously the teachings of Jesus, it should have no part of the status quo. It should not support the modern practices of consumer-driven mindsets. It should be in the margins of society, not only calling out for love, equality, and compassion, but being a living example of what love, equality, and compassion look like. One of the fascinating things about living a missional life together is that it breaks down barriers between people of different faiths and spiritual perspectives. When our primary focus is on love, equality, compassion, the other differences just seem to fade away into the background. Why someone is practicing love, equality, and compassion seems much less important than the fact that they are practicing love, equality, and compassion. The interesting thing is once you start practicing a missional life, it's very difficult to ever go back. Your life changes. Being the change you wish to see in the world is self-reinforcing. Catching the missional spirit means seeing that everything you thought you knew about life and church and religion is wrong. Once you see life as a mission, you just can't unsee it being that way. When spiritual organizations take on a missional outlook, it provides them with the opportunities for the community they exist in to see them for how they live and not what they profess to believe. The story of Pentecost, while not factual, certainly should challenge spiritual people. It should challenge us to live out what we say we believe so powerfully, so completely, that we are seen as a people who live differently. Not just the people who think and believe differently, but who actually live differently. In the Pentecost story, fire appeared among the people. But the reality is that people living the precepts of love, equality, and compassion out in their lives are their own fire. And frequently, those behaviors will cause others to catch fire, to become passionate about that way of living. So is the Pentecost story factual? I very seriously doubt it. But it does contain a whole lot of truth. And the truth is that living life holed up inside of four walls compels in comparison to living a life in love, equality, and compassion. And living lives that focus on love, equality, and compassion has a way of not only improving the world around us, but it has a way of improving our own spiritual lives as well. This is your opportunity to respond to the talk or to lend any other spiritual insights to this community that you would like around this topic. Are there those who would like to share?
Hey, Mark, when you mentioned what you were going to talk on this morning, I said, oh, gosh, it's going to be church. And secondly, my predetermined beliefs and attitude about Pentecostal was not very positive. Sure, was not right either.
Yeah.
When you said that the Pentecostal movement was starting to bloom in, but that's not the word, but in the progressive church, I said, oh, no. But then I could hear what you were saying and see the passion in which you said it and believed it. I could see that you had in it. Mm. I really learned a lot.
I appreciate that, Jeff. So thank you. I appreciate that, Jeff. Thank you. Are there others?
I love the love, compassion, and equality. And the one reason, I think they're around here.
Absolutely, I agree. Are there others?
Okay, well, I'm going to go on record as saying that I'm positive that I saw tongues of flame coming from him. And so I want all of us to put that on the record.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll turn
next
it.
Next week, Ralph is going to bring in a cake with 2,000 candles on it.